Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN. We're the one, 95.1 FM and 1080 AM radio. Well, I'm all ready to go here this morning. I have my guest in the studio, and we have a Thursday going for us. This is the 22nd day of March in the year is 2018. And, believe it or not, we have the streets of downtown Northfield cleared of snow. However, we are looking forward to 4 to 6 inches of snow coming up either tomorrow night or Saturday. So we'll get that in like a lion, out like a lamb. Well, that will be a myth because we certainly don't need any more snow, but we may get some. The gentleman that is in the studio with me right now, his name is Jay Webster. And Jay, I want to say thank you for taking the morning off to come on in and say hello.
Thank you for having me in.
You betcha. Just speak right into that microphone and we'll figure out who Jay Webster is. And Jay Webster is the manager of the Jesse James Lanes on Highway 3 South Northfield, owned and operated by Terry and Julie Heilman. Is that correct?
Not really. I'm just a co-worker there. I'm not the manager.
Oh, I thought you were the man.
No, I'm just a man that keeps things running smoothly.
Okay, so there are other individuals that have responsibilities to take care of things and make sure the guys and gals in the leagues get their games in and go down and fix the machine when you have an opportunity, things like that?
That's correct. Actually, I'm... By seniority, I'm low man on the totem pole.
You are. Okay. Well, it just so happens that, of course, I've been bowling on the Businessman's League for ever, and since it started, and so I usually felt the guy that was there during that particular league was the man. But, of course, I've met a lot of people that have worked there and do a great job, particularly Andy. Is that the right name, or Adam?
Well, we have two different Adams that work there, Adam Tilkey and Adam Nelson.
Yeah. Okay, Adam Tilkey. He's a good bowler.
Yes.
And so is the other Adam.
And Nelson is a good bowler, too. They both carry averages over 200.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Say, by the way, I'm going to find out how long you've had a background in bowling, but about a month ago, we had two different people roll a 300 on the same night.
Yes.
And the first guy was Gary
Greenland.
Right. And he rolled his 300. The crowd went crazy. We all ran down to look at the score sheet because it's so cool to see all strikes through a game. Something I don't think I've seen before. I've been there when it's happened, but I didn't see it. And then the team that we were bowling against had two guys that had nine strikes in a row, and one of them ended up with 12. Is that what you need, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, wow, the guy that was, I think he may have been bowling against me, had a 300, and then the other guy had something open in the 10th frame and ended up with like a 267 or 87
something
or whatever.
Something like that, yeah.
So that's kind of exciting to see two 300s in one night at a bowling alley.
Within just a few minutes of each other.
Yeah. So that's how we got to know each other, you and I, Jay, and I asked you to join me on the air, and I learned that you also served in the United States Marine Corps.
Yes, Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, Jarhead.
Yes.
Leatherneck.
Leatherneck, yes.
Yeah. Tough guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always admired people that have served in the service, and I have a penchant to believe that the Marines are the tough guys. I think I just saw him. I'm watching somebody walk across the street right now, and I just think I had him in my studio this week. Anyhow, at 9:07, let's get started right after we play a selection of music from the year that you graduated from high school. And we'll do that, and then we'll come back, and we'll find out how you ended up in Northfield, Minnesota. Here we go. See if you recognize this.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend. We've known each other since we were 9 or 10. Together we've climbed hills and trees, learned of love and ABC, skinned our hearts and skinned our knees. Goodbye, my friend, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. Now that the spring is in the air, pretty girls are everywhere. Think of me and I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
Well, there you have the name of the song. Does it sound familiar to you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, do you know who did it?
I don't recall who did that song.
I'll give you a hint. Terry Jacks. How's that for a hint? Seasons in the Sun, and that was number 2 in all of 1974.
Brings back memories.
Good. Where did you graduate? What high school did you graduate from?
I graduated from a high school in Vesterburg, Michigan, a little town of about 500 people.
What's the name of the town?
Vesterburg.
Vesterburg?
Vesterburg. V-E-S-T-A-B-U-R-G.
Vesterburg, Michigan. Is that UP or?
That's in the Lower Peninsula. It's about 11 miles from the geographical center of the Lower Peninsula.
Okay. So a Midwesterner.
Yes.
All right. And how many siblings do you have?
I have 4 siblings.
And who's the oldest in the roundabout there?
I am.
You are. Okay. So there's Jay. And then after Jay, who is there?
Susan.
Susan. How much younger is Susan than you?
About 18 months.
Oh, wow. Okay, then after Susan?
Is Marcy.
Marcy. Okay, and then after Marcy? Yes. I mean, how much younger is Marcy?
About 2 years.
Okay. And then after Marcy?
Is Betty.
Betty?
Betty.
Betty. I bet you she's a lot younger. I don't know why, but I just got a feeling.
Thinking she's another 2 years.
Oh, okay. So, 18 months, 2 years, and 4 years. Nice family, mom and dad.
And then I have one more, the baby.
The baby. Oh, and what's the baby?
Dick. His name is Dick.
Dick.
It's on his birth certificate.
Okay. D-I-C-K?
Yes.
Okay. And how much younger is he than you?
He's about 7 years younger than me.
Okay. I had a feeling there'd be one quite a bit younger. All right, so what the show is all about is we find out who the individual is in studio and go chronologically through your lifetime. And if you graduated in 1974, that means you were born in about 1956.
That's correct.
Hey, how did I do?
Not bad.
All right, thank you very much. And by the way, before we get any further, I got to talk about a place called the Quarterback Club in Northfield. You ever been to the Quarterback Club?
Yes, sir, I have.
What do you like best there?
The chicken.
Yeah, roasted chicken. That's people's favorite. And, of course, they have any and all kinds of foods, pitas, salads and soups and burgers and fish and... Oh, I like to talk about their baby-back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness oozing all over them in the form of their special sauce. They are so good. And, of course, they serve breakfast Monday through Saturday, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. And guess what? There are 2 people that work there for over 40 years, a husband and wife team. Steve is on the grill. And his wife, Lori, is at the window. And when you go in and order something, it comes out so fast, you hardly have time to take your coat and hat off. The Quarterback Club, locally owned and locally managed on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Jay Webster. And Jay is originally from Vesterburg, Michigan. dead center of the lower part of Michigan, and he now is employed at the Jesse James Lanes. And we'll find out how he got to Northfield, Minnesota. But first of all, how long did you live in Vesterburg?
Oh, my parents moved to Vesterburg when I was about 3, mm-hmm. and I lived there until just before my 20th birthday.
So you went through with the school system in Vesterburg.
Yes.
How big is Vesterburg, Michigan?
The town is a population of about 500 people when I was growing up.
So what school did you go to?
Vesterburg High School.
They had a high school with 500 people? A lot of farms around there?
A lot of farming communities. You had to go about 10 miles to get to anything bigger than Vesterburg.
Vesterburg. What was it? What did your parents do? Were they farmers?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom up until my youngest brother went into school. Then she started working sometimes outside the home. My father was a factory worker.
And what factory was near Vesterburg?
My dad drove about 11 miles to work every day to a town of Alma, and there was a factory called Alma Products at that time that worked there, and they made parts for the big four that there was back then. Now, there's not a big four anymore. It's a big three. But he made parts. He started out, I think, when they were making pistons, and he worked on clutch plates and things of that nature, and he did a lot of different parts of manufacturing for them over the years.
Was that a union shop?
Non-union shop.
Non-union. That was highly unusual, wasn't it?
No, yeah, it was very highly unusual, and the owners worked very hard to help keep it that way. Whenever they would start looking at putting a union in, everybody would get a pay raise.
Oh, that'd be cool. Now, when you say the big four, let me see if I can guess, all right? We, of course, are... How far from Detroit is Vesterburg and Northfield in Michigan?
Let's see. Vesterburg is probably about 2.5-3 hours from Detroit, depending on what part of Detroit and which roads you take to get there. And from Northfield here, Vesterburg's probably about a 14-hour drive.
I was thinking Northfield, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. I just thought I'd throw that in.
It's probably about 2.5 hours from somewhere in that area.
So you say the big three, and then the big four. Okay, let me see if I can get it, all right. General Motors.
Yes.
Ford.
Yes.
Chrysler.
Yes.
AMC.
Yes.
Oh, I did it.
Very well.
And when you were in the eighth grade, they came out with the Gremlin.
Yeah. I don't know if that was supposed to be a takeoff on the movie that came out later.
Why are you laughing?
Yeah, they were interesting little vehicles.
Well, you know, I was a proud owner of one.
They had their market share for quite a few years.
Yeah. I paid $19.99, and I got a free portable black and white TV with it. So that was my very first brand new car I ever had.
And they're probably both collector's items if you still have them.
Yeah, well, you know what I did? I traded it in on a Pacer.
You made a real step up.
Hey, they ran.
Yeah, and then from there you could go to the Pinto.
Yeah, okay. So was the area that you lived in Vesterburg, Michigan, town of 500, were most of the people factory workers, or were they people that maybe supplied, I assume there are a lot of farms around that area?
There's a lot of small family farms at that time. You could still make a living on something less than 200 acres if you had a combination. When I was growing up, it was before bulk milk, so you could run, you know, 4 or 5 head of cows and some cattle and some hogs and sheep and chickens and, you know, a few acres of cultivated products and a little bit of a truck farm, too, you know, with vegetables and stuff for yourself. And families could be pretty self-sufficient as far as feeding themselves and things of that nature. And then you could sell a little bit of corn or beans or hay to whatever, whoever needed to or whatever. I know my cousins used to grow cucumbers, and we'd sell them to a local pickle factory that was in a little town of Edmore, which was just a little ways away.
Now, when your dad went off to work, how much time did it take him to get from your house and to work and back?
Well, okay. Round trip, it's probably a little over a half an hour.
So and 15 minutes one way?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's
somewhere
not, that's
yeah,
not
something
bad.
Like that. He had guys that were co-workers that worked lived in the same general area, and they would carpool in together.
Carpool. 15-minute drive.
Something like that.
Save on gas. So you being the oldest kid in the family, I would imagine that you had your fair share of maybe babysitting when mom and dad were going to have a night out on the town?
I would say a fair share.
Yeah. What about grandparents? Let's talk about your father's parents, your grandparents on your dad's side.
Well, I never really met my grandmother when I was old enough to remember. She died, I think, within a few months of my birth or just before my birth. I don't remember the dates exactly. I know she was involved with a car accident and ended up dying of complications from that, from my understanding. I was just a twinkle at the time.
Yeah.
No, and then, so then my grandfather on my dad's side, he had a cabin at a lake, Townline Lake, which is probably about 45 minutes from us, and he would spend his summers there, and he would spend his winters with us and live with us. Now, that started happening somewhere probably around when I was like 5 or 6. I don't remember exactly.
Was he a retired farmer?
Retired farmer.
Okay. So then he was always home, I suppose, so you couldn't mess around.
Well, during the wintertime, he was home, so
yeah.
Quite a little bit. So he kind of helped keep an eye on things. And at that time, mom was still at home, too, because we had my little brother was.
Yeah.
All of us were little until I went to school, and mom stayed at home until my little brother started going off to school.
I would imagine you spent summers at the lake then?
We spent some summers at the lake. Not a lot of time, but a respectable amount of time. He had just a little cabin there. And one of the memories that I have was one winter, it thawed out early in Michigan, which would be like an early spring here in Minnesota. And I actually mowed the lawn. And Grandpa decided, well, let's go back. We got an early spring. We'll go back to the cabin. And he went back to the cabin. And like 2 weeks later, we had to go pick him up and bring him back home because we got hit with snow.
Yeah, and like we're going to get this weekend. But
probably.
Maybe not that. Maybe we won't be hit that hard. How about on your, that would be your grandpa.
Webster.
Webster, okay. Let's talk about mom and your mom's parents, your grandma and grandpa.
Well, where I grew up from the time that I can remember until I graduated from high school, my grandparents lived about 4 miles from us on a farm. They had approximately 80 acres, and they ran dairy and beef and chickens and the whole nine yards up until they got too old and they had to end up retiring.
Did you ever have the opportunity to spend some summers there helping them milk and slaughter or whatever else, pick vegetables?
Yeah, well, they always had about a half an acre of potatoes. That would help them get through the winter and things of that nature. But I remember we have an old black and white of me sitting on a one-legged milk stool milking a cow when I was about 3 years old.
A one-legged?
One-legged milk stool.
Okay, a one-legged milk stool.
Basically, they take a piece of tree limb or something that's about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and they nail a 1x4 or something like that on top of it, and that's your stool, and you can grab it with one hand and move from one cow to another, and you can have a milk bucket in the other hand. Now, at that age, I wasn't moving the milk bucket or the stool much, but they got a big kick out of having a picture of me under the cow and trying to milk. I don't know how effective I was.
Okay.
But I do remember milking cows multiple times and moving manure and baling hay and picking stone and feeding the chickens. And I remember watching the family butcher the last hog that they decided when they finally got out of the hog business and butchering the last hog.
When you were growing up, where did you spend Christmas?
We usually spent Christmas at home, unless it was on the weekend, and then we'd go to Grandpa and Grandma's at the Frost residence. That's
your
mom's maiden name was Frost.
Frost, okay. And so plenty of memories of Christmas on the farm?
plenty of memories of Christmas on the farm and all kinds of other things on the farm.
Like?
Right. Well, I almost put a pitchfork through my foot when I was showing manure one time. That was
that's kind of...
That was a memory.
Yeah.
There's a pond on the farm and it's surrounded by trees, and we'd go down there. My cousins and I were hunting frogs and doing other things and chasing cows and getting chased by steers and bulls and just hunting the farm or goofing around on the farm and climbing the apple trees and the pear tree and things of that nature that were on the farm.
An all-American life.
Yeah, it was interesting. It got kind of warm baling hay up there with a tin roof on the top of the barn, but... my uncle posted a while back on Facebook, you'd never know what work is unless you baled hay in the summer.
I shocked oats one summer, and I'll never do that again. What about, this seems like a Norman Rockwell type deal, you know, with the frog in the pocket. And did that pond have fish in it?
No, there wasn't any fish in it. It was a shallow enough pond that would freeze solid in the wintertime.
So you skate on it.
You could skate on it. I never did develop a good skill of skating, but some family members did. But it was great for frogs in the summer, for hunting frogs. And so you always had something to go down with a BB gun or a stick.
You know, I live out in the country, and sometimes I can hear the frogs. And I think maybe two or three times I've seen the frogs that, you know, their legs would hang out when you grabbed them. But we have those little tiny frogs. I mean, they're as big as your thumb, maybe. And they are on the side of the house or the patio door or in the grass or on the deck. And I don't know if kids nowadays can go out in the country and catch frogs anymore with all the pollution problems that have been around in the building and all that.
I don't know. You hear them here and there sometimes over... I live over by the Northfield Retirement Center, and there's the little drainage creek that goes through there, and sometimes, and then John Oak Park is over there, I think it is, and they keep that. That's a drainage type park in a lot of wetlands in there, and you can, when we walk around there, my wife and I can usually hear frogs in there in the summertime.
Wow.
I haven't seen them, but I can hear them.
Yeah. Sometimes those frogs have it bad. They croak every night. Terrible. It is 9:25 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Jay Webster. Jay Webster is relatively new to Northfield, and he is the fellow that works out at the Jesse James Lanes on Highway 3 South Northfield. We'll be back with our guest, Jay, in just a moment.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the National Sports Center in Blaine. See up to 150 home improvement experts. The Home Improvement and Design Expo, Saturday at the National Sports Center in Blaine. It's the smart place to start your next home improvement project. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
All right, America. H&R Block has some good news. For a limited time only, you could get a refund advance loan of up to $3,000 the same day you file at Block. That's right. You could get up to $3,000 today. No interest. Told you it was good news. To learn more or find participating locations near you, visit hrblock.com. Get your taxes won. Optional tax refund related loan from BofI Federal Bank. Not your tax refund. $500, $750, $1,250, or $3,000 loans offered. Approval and loan amount based on expected refund and other conditions. Funds loaded on prepaid card. Tax returns may be e-filed without applying for this loan. Fees for other products or features may apply.
H&R Block, 1300 Bolenbacher Drive in Northfield. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5. Walk-ins are welcome or call 645-6281 for an appointment.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation on the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was standing over by the tomatoes, and here he come, running through the pole beans, through the fruits and vegetables, naked as a jaybird. And I hollered over to Ethel. I said, "Don't look, Ethel." And it's too late. She'd already been incensed.
come.
Boogity, boogity.
There goes.
Boogity, boogity.
And he ain't wearing no clothes.
Oh, yes, they call him the street.
Well, does this song sound familiar to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay, name that tune.
And they call him The Streak.
It's called The Streak, and it was number 3 in all of 1974, the year you graduated from Vestaberg High School in Michigan. And do you know who sang it by any chance? Probably not. Ray Stevens. Ray Stevens had a lot of comical songs in that era. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this morning is Jay Webster, and he is a gentleman that would take care of your needs if you're ever out at the Jesse James Lanes. Recently moved to Northfield, recent by comparison to me, for example, and is from Vestaberg, Michigan, and we've got him grown up on a small in a small town of 500. Now, what type of a house did a family of five kids and mom and dad, what kind of a house? Now, I'm picturing, let's say, Denison, okay? You've been out to Denison?
Yes, I have.
Okay, now, that has a little small area with, I think, 3 restaurants even, and a couple of bars, and a few homes on the west side of, or east side of the Main Street. How 500 people, I mean, that sounds like maybe like 100 houses at the most.
Well, from what I was told back in the day, they had like 6 saloons.
They had what?
6 bars in the old days.
Saloons, huh?
With,
okay.
Yeah. But it, as things grew out, and then during the Prohibition time, that township became a dry township. And stayed that way up until the last I knew. Still a dry township at this time.
Uh-huh.
But Vesper, probably maybe 40 houses when I was a kid in town itself. The house I grew up in when my mom and dad purchased it was just a basement. It had never been fully developed. And while we were living there, they built the upstairs onto it. And it's a basement with a single-story rancher style. House, it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and we had a lot of fun growing up there on a little less than an acre of land right there off of the main drag of M-46 that goes east and west through the state of Michigan.
You know, you bring back some memories for me. I recall when I'm older than you by a few years or more, and, you know, we'd see these, what we called basement houses. And, you know, what's the deal with that? You know, well, the party that was building first put in the basement and put on the floor and then had a walk-in, and they would live in that and as they built the rest of the house. And that was not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what your family did?
Yeah, the house that when they bought it when it was a basement, and you can still tell by looking at the design if you drive by or walk around a little bit. It was dug into the side of a hill, and so you had one part of the basement that was actually exposed to the elements, and the rest of the basement only was exposed to the elements for about 2 feet, and it had windows in it that you could get out in case of an emergency. But on the one side of the house, there was a big picture window that opened out into the viewing area, and whoever had started construction, for whatever reason or another, moved on and it became available. And my parents bought it when I was, you know, less than 5.
Okay, so it was a good place to be when a tornado came through town.
Yeah, we would have not had to move, and not at all. We were very secure, and we actually had tornadoes go through in my time frame, not on our particular area, but we've had tornadoes go through. I remember one time as a teenager watching the tornado form in the cloud formation to the north of us, and it actually hit a town 11 miles east of us.
Kind of scary.
It's kind of interesting because you didn't know when you were watching it form which way it was going, but there was a strong wind coming out of the northwest, so the odds were it wasn't going to hit us. So
So you grew up in Vesterburg. Now, what was the school district like? Was it just for that small community, or was it the way they do it nowadays and everything's consolidated?
Well, there was a lot of small towns within about a 4 or 5 mile. Well, not a lot, but there were several that had an elementary school, and then some of them had a choice of where they could go to high school after they got out of elementary school. There were not very far from us, see, probably about within less than 10 miles anyways. I'm not sure exactly where it was as far as mileage. There was a town that was, when I was a kid, it had the reputation of being the smallest active post office in the nation.
Oh.
And the two of us together would be able to go inside, and that's all the room you'd have on the inside for the public side. And you only had room for one postal worker on the other side. It was, well, some people used to joke that a double outhouse was bigger than the post office.
Well, I imagine the person that had that job, though, had it made.
Well, I don't know what it was like in the wintertime. I never did see any furnace set up for that building, so
okay.
I don't know.
Well, it's a. I think back then they appointed people rather than hire them, but I don't know the facts. 9:34 on 1080 Radio KYMN out of Northfield. My guest this morning is Jay Webster. And Jay, how big of a class did you graduate with in 1974?
There was 52 of us in the graduating class.
Well, that's a pretty good size compared to your elementary education. 52 in your class.
All right.
Now, tell me what it was like in high school in Vesterburg, Michigan, with 51 classmates.
Well, we started out with a little bit more than that, but you'd always have attrition, and we graduated with 52.
Always have a what?
Yeah, attrition, where kids move out. And then at that time, you also have kids that quit school for one reason or another. One of the guys I knew, a couple of them joined the military to go fight or do whatever because they weren't that keen on high school or whatever. And then sometimes people drop out and get married or have children. It was a small school. Everybody in high school knew who you were pretty much. By the time you were, when you were a freshman, you knew everybody in all the upperclassmen. And then by the time you were a senior, everybody knew who you were pretty much all the way down to the junior high level.
Yeah. And you're the BMOC, as they say, big man on campus when you were a senior. So when you were going to high school, did you participate in any particular sport or speech or theater or orchestra or band or woodworking or metal shop or DECA or what, anything like that?
Well, in our small community, almost all the guys took woodworking at one time or another or an auto shop at one time or another. But I participated in football, basketball, and baseball and ended up lettering in all three sports.
Really?
When I was in high school.
Wow. How old were you? What grade were you in when you got your first start on all three of those teams?
My first start?
Let's do football, okay?
My first start came when I was a sophomore, and as far as starting, and that was in some home game. I don't remember. We were winning tremendously.
Okay.
There were different things that get going there.
What position?
Well, when I first started playing as a freshman, I was a tight end. And then I think my first start came, I think I was a pulling guard because we ran into trouble with having enough guys on the offensive line.
Yeah. Well, this is a question I ask anybody and everybody that has participated in sports. In football, what's that one play you'll never, ever forget?
The one play? Well, that's hard.
It's coming to your mind.
There's two of them that are pretty standout.
Well, what are they?
Well, one was when I was a freshman, we were in a JV game, and I got put in to play defensive end. And because they were running sweeps. And one of my classmates was the linebacker behind me, and I had never played that position. I knew the rules. I knew how to play it, but I'd never played it in a game yet. And the coach put me in, and the friend that was of mine was a linebacker behind me. He said, if they run a sweep this way, you just take out as many blockers as you can, and I'll tackle the man with the ball. And they were just killing us. Well, they ran a sweep right away, and there were three guys coming at me, and I just threw myself out. Now it's an illegal block in high school football, from what I understand, but I threw a crossbody block on the guy in the middle, and they were shoulder to shoulder, so my legs took out one guy, my torso took out one guy, and my shoulders and head and arms took out the other guy. And my friend, the linebacker, dropped the guy for a 5-yard loss, and they did not run a sweep against us the rest of the day on that side. They ran it the other way.
Okay, and so, that's something you'll never forget.
That's something I'll never forget, because the whole, I mean, it was my 10 minutes of fame, and which drew into a half an hour of fame, because it was an away game, and I had a half hour ride back to school, and I had my hero, and as a freshman, and I only weighed like 110 pounds, and I was a hero for a moment.
Yeah,
you know?
You were the man.
And those type of things.
What was the
out.
Other play?
The other play was when we had one where we decided to do a 2-point conversion after a touchdown, and I was playing tight end at the time, and they just threw a quick, short, extra point conversion type pass to me into the end zone, and I caught it for a touch, not a touchdown, but a 2-point conversion.
Yeah. Did that mean a difference in the game?
Not really, but it was the only time I ever scored any points in football.
All right, so let's go to, by the way, folks, we're talking with Jay Webster, who now lives in Northfield, I assume on the northwest side of town, and is employed out at the Jesse James Lanes. So what about basketball?
Basketball, I think I first, oh boy, the first time I started in basketball was probably a senior night,
mm-hmm.
because I never started. So it would probably be senior night my senior year. Got to be in the starting lineup. I was usually seventh man off the, or second man off the man bench, so seventh man on the team. Usually.
Remember any spectacular play or game that you that's in that head of yours?
Well, one of my biggest memories from that is one of the times I was a defensive specialist, and my attitude was I can outrun anybody that's dribbling, because they can't run and dribble as fast as I can run without the ball. And when there was a time that I went for to stop a guy that got a steal from a friend of mine, and we were both running for the layup, and I was running to try to stop him, and I went up, and somehow our feet got tangled up, and we both, the foul was called on me, and that's, probably was proper, but we both ended up slamming into the wall, and I jumped up and ran back to the proper position to get ready for him to shoot his foul shots, and he didn't get up. He wasn't hurt seriously, but he ended up taking some time out of the game. He had hurt his leg. And for me, it was like 2 days later, I was like, man, that knee is bothering me.
Yeah.
And I had smacked into that concrete wall, and I didn't really realize it. It didn't have any negative effect on me for 2 days, but man, it was a couple of days that was really sore for a while.
Isn't it amazing how you retain those memories? How about baseball?
Baseball, as a starter, I had a couple of starts when I was a junior, but I never really lettered until late in my junior year, my senior year, and was a full-time starter my senior year.
What position?
It varied between left field and right field, depending on the lineup that we had on the team. We had a young man with a stronger arm than me, but he didn't throw to third very accurately sometimes. So sometimes from right field, I'd get the call because I could throw it to third accurately from right.
Wow.
And then other times, he would play third. It all depend a little bit on the lineup of the opposing team.
It is already 18 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Jay Webster, my guest here this morning on KYMN, a friend you can count on. And we're going to take a brief break. We will be right back.
Let us help you maximize your earnings with a certificate of deposit from Community Resource Bank. Invest in a 60-month CD at 2% or a 48-month at 1.75 annual percentage yield, or choose a 54-month bump option at 1.70% APY. Get the best deposit rates around with Community Resource Bank in Northfield, Cannon Falls, and Roseville. Good bankers, good friends. $25,000 minimum deposit required. Penalty for early withdrawal may reduce earnings. Other rates and terms are available. Member FDIC.
At Harry Brown's Family Automotive, this month everything is based on savings. That's another of our family values. Save up to $11,000 off MSRP on a hard-working 2018 Chevy Silverado LT Double Cab. Or save up to $5,000 off MSRP on a popular 2018 Chevy Equinox LT SUV. Isn't it nice when you keep money in your pocket? Chevy, find new roads. Harry Brown's Family Automotive in Faribault. Online at harrybrownsgm.com. Offers end 4/2/18. OAC must be in stock. See dealer for details.
Kung Fu Fighting. That is correct. Kung Fu Fighting. Number 5 in all of 1974. But I'll bet you'll never guess who did it.
Oh, I know it wasn't Bruce Lee.
No.
Everybody was Kung Fu Fighting.
Name of the guy is Carl Douglas. Kung Fu Fighting. Number 5 in all of 1974, the year my guest graduated from high school in Vestaburg, Michigan, where he lettered in all three major sports, football, baseball, and basketball. 1974 is the year that you graduated. And you mentioned that of the 50-some kids that you graduated with, some didn't like school and went out in the workaday world. Some ended up getting married and having a family, and some of them went in the service. And I know that you're an ex-Marine, or I guess you're never an ex. I know that you're a Marine, a jarhead, a leatherneck, and the Vietnam War was pretty much in full swing as you were going through your senior year and getting ready to end, fortunately. What was your situation as a senior in high school graduating in June or May of 1974?
Oh, let's see. Baseball season was just winding up. The war was on the downcline. So, and they had just, well, let's see, right around that same time was when adults had been determined to be 18 years old, mm-hmm. and we were some of the first to legally vote.
And drink.
And drink and everything else when I was a senior. We had my senior year. We had a young man who, or was it my junior year? We had a young man who ran for school board during his senior year. And it was kind of interesting. He didn't get elected, but, you know, there was so many different things going on because of the new mentality of 18-year-olds having the right to vote. If you could be drafted and go off the war and die, then you should be able to have a right to vote and have some say in national politics. And there was a lot to be said about that and a lot of input back and forth, people's ideas on that, and it was interesting. And being born in January, I was one of the older ones in my classroom, because typically if you don't have your birthday before school starts, then you gotta kind of wait till next year. It was interesting trying to figure out, you know, where the world is going, where the United States is going, and whether I should go to college or figure out what to do for.
Was college something that your parents and grandparents never experienced, and you would have been the first in the family to go to college?
Wouldn't be the first to go to college. My father quit school his senior year. My mom graduated from high school. She didn't go to college, and neither did my father. But we had other family members go to college. My one aunt went to college that I know for sure. I think I had another uncle on my dad's side that went to some college. My one aunt, my mother's younger sister, went to college and graduated and became a missionary, and I know her well. She's still alive.
What was the attitude of your classmates and those before you in regards to Vietnam and national demonstrations, like this town right here was full of students demonstrating regularly. What was it like in a little town like Vestaburg, Michigan, in regards to protest or the peace movement, etc.?
Well, in a little town like Vestaburg, you're the very agricultural community, very farm-oriented. The businesses were all related to keeping tractors and trucks and stuff on the road and combines functioning and stuff of that nature, and grain elevators everywhere along the railroad that went through town, too. And our community was, I'd say, in hindsight, was a pretty conservative community. And so we weren't, there wasn't any protest from the school students of any kind that I can remember at all. And we were far enough from the big cities of Detroit and Lansing and even Saginaw that we used to joke about it when we were kids that any kind of new fashion for clothing would always get to us like a year later. So, and then if I had, sometimes there were, you know, some kind of new fad for clothing would come if I had a relative that came to visit from one of those other areas and they were wearing something that was one of the latest designs, everybody would look at them like, who are you and what are you wearing? Because I remember when bell bottoms became a fad and one of my cousins came to our area in the summer when we were playing baseball and stuff and he had a pair of bell bottoms on and I was like, what in the world do you need that for? I mean, all the bugs are going to crawl up your leg.
Did you have a perm or did you grow long hair?
I always kept mine fairly short because I was always very active as a kid. And in the summertime, generally speaking, my mom would buzz my hair so that I didn't have to worry about sweating profusely under my baseball cap. I played baseball and softball profoundly during my summer years. And if we weren't running around outside, I mean, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have Xbox, we didn't, you know, in Vestaburg, you were lucky if you had three channels on the television.
I was going to ask you, did you have black and white television?
Well, color TV came to us late, black and white TV came to us late, and like I said, three channels weren't guaranteed three channels.
Were they all out of, like, Detroit?
Well, we ended up getting a fourth channel that came out of Mount Pleasant, Michigan, from the Central Michigan University. And that ended up being when TV started going to UHF. And our first TV that we had didn't even have UHF. So,
do you remember life without a TV?
I remember life without a TV.
You remember
when I was
your first TV?
I remember our first TV and something going wrong with it one time and my dad working on it, and all of a sudden now we had four channels after he did some work on it.
You remember your first bicycle?
I can remember the first bicycle that my mom and dad had. It was something new at the time. They were solid rubber tires, so you didn't have to worry about them getting a flat. And I remember the first bicycle that I had of my own.
Yeah.
Because that was the family bike. I had to share it with my sisters. But when I was 11, I had gotten a little bit of money from my grandfather, giving me a little bit for helping him bale hay. And I had this little route where I would go around door to door and sell these return address labels that you could put on an envelope. And I had a little bit of money burning a hole in my pocket. And they took me into town, and there was a used bicycle outside of the hardware store that they wanted $11 for. And it was an old Schwinn. And the spokes were all rusted up on it, but they wanted $11 for it. And I was 11 years old, and I paid $11 for my bicycle. And one of the things that's ironic is I still have it.
Oh, for gosh sakes.
It's an old Schwinn. And when I left home and joined the Marine Corps, my dad just put it in the shed. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, my dad said, the bike's still here if you want it.
That's great.
It was a good experience for me because we went in, and I don't remember what it cost me to buy spokes for it, but my dad showed me and taught me and put all new spokes in it for me, so then I had a decent bike.
All right. Did you go to the prom?
I did go to the prom as a lone stud. I did not take a date with me to the prom.
Was that okay back in 74?
It was okay back in 74. For one thing, I had a camera, and I went with my camera, and that was a lot of fun. And then, interesting point on that is a buddy of mine asked me about dating in high school. And it was a small school, and I said to him, "No, I'm not dating any girls." He said, "Why?" I said, "Well, you think about it. All I have to do is think about tell you that I'm going to ask Becky out for a date. And tomorrow, and you're a good friend of mine, you don't have loose lips. And tomorrow, it was Friday night we were talking. I said, on Monday, I could come to school and everybody will tell me whether Becky said yes or no, if we had a good time, and if she's willing to go out on a second date. And I haven't even asked her yet." I said, "That's how tiny the town is." I said, "I don't need my life to be that popular." Now, we didn't have to worry about the paper because there was no local paper. There wasn't a paper for 10 miles. But still, when you have that kind of a town where everybody knows everybody's ins and outs, I'm like, no.
So
I don't want
my... Did you have a crush on somebody?
Oh, she probably had a crush on four or five different people.
Okay.
You know, you have a different crush every couple of weeks when you're a kid.
Yeah. We're going to take a final break this hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Jay Webster.
Syngenta Seeds Incorporated in Stanton is proud to salute all their farm friends during National Ag Week on a job well done. Syngenta Seeds knows the importance of farming. Innovation has led Syngenta Seeds to be part of the world's largest supplier of agriculture products. For all your seed needs and crop protection, contact your Syngenta dealer. Syngenta Seeds Incorporated in Stanton.
The Northville area VFW would like to invite you and your family to join them at their 72nd annual Easter egg hunt on Saturday, March 31st, beginning at 9 a.m. sharp. The Easter egg hunt is located at the bottom of Old Main Hill on the St. Olaf campus, just west of Lincoln Street between 1st and 2nd. Kids ages 0 to 12 are encouraged to participate and will be divided into three age groups. This is an amazing event that attracts hundreds of kids of all ages filling their Easter baskets each year. Please join the Northfield VFW for an excellent good time.
Heritage Dental Care in Northfield is a general dental clinic specializing in a variety of dental procedures and services. Make an appointment today with Drs. David Brust, David Buck, Bo Stanley, or Michael Thompson. New patients and emergencies welcome 5 days a week at Heritage Dental Care.
I thought maybe this might have been a popular song your senior year at Vestaberg High School. Remember this one?
Yes.
What a lovely way of saying how much you love me.
That, of course, is Paul Anka and Having My Baby, number 4 in all the year of 1974. And once again, Jay Webster is my guest on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. What about your first car?
My first car of my own.
Yeah.
Now we're jumping into the ahead a little bit because the first car that was actually mine, I bought when I was in the Marine Corps.
Let's hold off on that then.
Okay.
So we covered high school where you did not go to the prom. You lettered in.
Well, I did go to the prom, but I didn't take a date.
But you brought a camera.
Right.
Yeah. Picture this. And now we've got the war winding down in Vietnam. You must have had friends that went off to Vietnam that were older than you, you know. Is it true?
Yes, I have several cousins that were, you know, because my dad was a baby of 9 and my mom was one around the middle of 11. So I have cousins that have served in every branch of the service that there is.
So did you have any, given it any thought? I knew at 18 the rules said you could vote, the rules said you could drink. And one of the things I got to tell you, when I my first radio job in Wisconsin, kids in high school that were 18 could go to a bar. It was, here we called them 3-2 bars, but over there they didn't have 3-2, but they were just beer only. And kids in 18 could go, and I couldn't imagine a kid coming to class in the morning smelling of beer and not get in trouble because it was legal for them to drink beer at 18. So anyhow, where was I going with this? Okay, so are you paying attention to what's going on in Vietnam? Was this beginning to strike home with you? Was the lottery around?
I don't remember. Well, the lottery was, and I remember one of my cousins joined the Army when he was watching the lottery, and his number came, his, however the lottery worked exactly, his birthday, I guess it was, came up with a single-digit
okay.
prompting. So he figured, I'll join before I get drafted. And he ended up joining the Army. And he was a college student at the time. He probably could have gotten a deferment due to education. But he decided he would join, and then he would be able to choose what type of vocation that they would be teaching him. And he ended up not getting sent to Vietnam at all. He ended up getting sent to Alaska for a permanent duty station, and they were building the notorious pipeline through Alaska at the time. And in his off-duty hours, he worked on the pipeline, and he did fairly well because he didn't have to live on the economy. But I have several cousins that served in Nam. Most of my cousins that served in Nam never really talked to me about it and were not very verbal about it because they were not normally pleasant type of conversations that you want to have. Just like my grandfather never talked to me about serving in World War One, and my uncles never talked about serving in World War Two.
Okay, so when you got out of high school, what were your plans?
Well, the nice thing about where my father worked, and even being a non-union plant, the guy had an incentive set up that if you went to college, you would get a $1,000 scholarship from the factory to go to school for each year that you went to school. So I knew I had at least $1,000 to go to college. And Central Michigan University was close, which is about 20 miles from where I grew up. And I was thinking, well, you know, the bright thing was you were encouraged to go off to university if you could. And it was a little bit different in the 70s than it is today. College didn't cost you quite as much, and for me it was only a few miles away. And so I looked around at other universities and stuff, and I ended up going to Central Michigan University for a period of time.
Did you have a major or just the basic requirements?
I was doing the basic requirements my freshman year. I was kind of interested in baseball. I was a walk-on on the baseball team and was made it till the final cut in the fall. And then I was thinking about pursuing possibly education as far as coaching, things of that nature. So I took some baseball classes, some sports classes to help me prepare for the concept of coaching in the future.
Well, we have reached 10 o'clock. We have to take a break for the news, and we'll be back and continue our saga with Jay Webster. He's employed at the Jesse James Lanes out on Highway 3. And you are listening to 1080 AM radio, almost 50 years old, will be in September. And you are also listening to The One, 95.1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota.
Trade war looms. Statesmen tussle. I'm John Trout. The Trump administration is expected to impose tariffs today on at least $60 billion in Chinese imports, on top of steel and aluminum tariffs that go into effect tomorrow. On Wall Street, the Dow's down nearly 300 points as investors await China's next move.
What Beijing does, we all wait to see. They are more than likely to launch some sort of retaliatory action, even as the senior leadership said just a couple of days ago that they don't want a trade war. It is in the interests of no one, and they wanted to fight any trade issues through multilateral organizations like the World Trade Organization.
Correspondent Andrew Stevens in Hong Kong. In Washington, President Trump fires back at a political foe.
Hard to say if it would be a fight anyone would want to see, but former Vice President Joe Biden, speaking in an anti-sexual harassment conference in Miami, spoke of how he felt with the Access Hollywood outtake tape with what Donald Trump said he can do to women.
I was in high school. I take the kind of Jim
Pintella. Beat the hell out of him, Biden said. President Trump was not going to let that pass, tweeting this morning, "Crazy Joe Biden is trying to act like a tough guy. Actually, he is weak, both mentally and physically, and yet he threatens me for the second time with physical assault. He doesn't know me, but he would go down fast and hard, crying all the way. Don't threaten people, Joe." Bob Costantini, the White House.
Police say a cell phone video left behind by Mark Anthony Condit, the bomber whose deadly explosives terrorized Austin, Texas, details the weapons he built and amounts to a confession. But his motive remains a mystery. In an interview with CNN, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg apologizes for the compromise of some 50 million of its social network's users.
I'm really sorry that this happened. You know, we have a basic responsibility to protect people's data.
Zuckerberg says he'd be happy to testify in front of Congress if necessary. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and bowling alleys. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Jay Webster. Jay is an employee at Jesse James Lanes here in Northfield and has arrived in Northfield later on in his life. We got him through high school, Vestaburg, Michigan, and now we're going to do, you did the college for a while, is that it?
Yeah, I did college at Central Michigan University for a while. It was kind of an interesting stay when you're trying to learn who you are, what you're going to do, and your pursuit there. And I was in a fundamental to baseball class, learning how to play baseball more effectively, because before that I was just an outfielder. And the professor, which was a coach for the Central Michigan University team at the time, had a philosophy that you must learn how to play every position. And they had an indoor arena for certain events, and we played in there. So we were playing in the wintertime and whatever. And we saw, I learned how to play second base and first base and third base and shortstop and catching, and learned how to teach pitching and to pitch a little bit, things of that nature. And then we got into hitting, and I had been on a walk-on on the baseball team earlier in the year, and I had got cut at the final cut at the season. So I wasn't invited back for spring training. And we had the indoor batting cages set up, and all the freshman wannabes that were in my class were pitching, and they were not. I was in the batting cage, and the coach had a couple of them pitching to me, and I was hitting them well. And then a couple of days later, they brought in this machine that is a pitching machine, and has what they call double jugs, so you could change the speed of the ball, and you could change the rotation of the ball, so they could throw a knuckleball or a curve or a screwball or anything they wanted to at you. And the kid was feeding them to me, and I was hitting them real well. And the coach got in there. He said, "Get out of there. You get in." And he got in there, and he started changing the speeds of the ball and changing the rotation of the wheels, and I was hitting the ball really well. And then finally he shut the machine off, and he called me out there, and he pulled me aside, and he says, "Jay, weren't you on the – didn't you walk onto the field in the fall?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "I don't remember you hitting like this." I said, "Well, no." He says, "What's your reasoning?" I said, "Well, I knew that my glove and my arm are only just good, nothing to impress you. So I knew I had to hit better if I wanted to make the team. So I hadn't played all summer because I was working, and my timing was off, and I was trying too hard." He says, "Well," he says, "you come back out, we'll get you a spot on the team." He said, "The way you hit, there's nothing that could stop you short of injury. You could go all the way to the majors. It's not you
majors."
He says, "You got too good of an eye, and your hand-eye coordination is too good." He said, "I mean, even if you couldn't field for beans, which he says you're a good enough player," he said, "they could put you on the American League, and you could be a pitch hitter, you know, because, you know, designated hitters in the American League came out right around that same time, too." And I'm like, Okay, so I thought, well, okay, well, I'll come back. I was thinking in my mind, I'm going to come back and be a baseball player, you know, in the future. But that's not the direction that God took me, because I have a real relationship with Jesus Christ, and I pray a lot about what I'm going to do with my decisions. And it was just a couple of days later, I was walking across campus, going to class, and thinking, yeah, well, I'm going to come back this fall and make the team. They'll give me a scholarship. I'll be in Lake Flint, and I'll make a lot of money in professional sports, and I can do whatever ministry I want to do with the church or kids. And I always dreamed of making an impact on young children and helping kids get a better start in life. And it seemed to me, as I was walking across campus, I felt like I heard, and I'll say God, although I didn't hear it, but it seemed like I heard him say, yeah, you can do that, and that's okay, or you can do what I want you to do, and you'll have a lot more fun. And I'm like, more fun than baseball? Okay, that's cool. But so I just walked away from college. A couple of classes I ended up not doing too well in because of not turning papers in on time and stuff, but my attitude towards school changed. And I ended up getting a full-time job with a friend of mine who was doing construction, and he ended up hiring me because he knew he could trust me. And I ended up supervising a small group of repairmen he had a contract to repair apartments that were rented out to the university students during that summer. So I was responsible for monitoring a crew. I'd go in and investigate the apartments, see what needed to be done, and then we'd go in there and we'd fix them. And I was responsible for supervising two men several years older than me to make sure that they're doing the right work. And I ended up doing that. And when school started, we had the apartments all fixed, and we ended up in a lull. And I was like, what am I doing? Well, in the meantime, the local church that I attended had asked me to be the lay youth minister. So here at the age of 19, quote-unquote, the youth pastor of the church, taking the youth all over the state and preaching every Sunday night to teenagers. When you're a teenager yourself, and it was kind of ironic, and then trying to find another part-time job. Well, one day the phone rang, and I said, oh, I got that. That's my job. And that is back when there's no cell phones, you know, because everybody's fighting to answer. So I picked up the phone. I said, hello, Webster's. And he said, hello, this is your Marine recruiter. Is Jay there? I'm like, this is Jay. He says, yeah, Jay, I'm your Marine recruiter. And I'm like, I ended up joining the Marine Corps.
Well, how did he get your name?
Well, if you're an athlete of any decent standing in high school, the recruiters all seem to be able to get a hold of your mailing address and stuff like that nature. I don't know in the past if coaches put them out there, or if they solicited coaches or not, but up until then, I had never gotten a phone call. But I had gotten mailing from the Navy, from the Army, the Marine Corps, all kinds of stuff ever since I was a junior in high school, trying to recruit me into volunteering. And I ended up volunteering for the Marine Corps.
And tell me, he's the one that called you, but had you given thought to the Marines, the Army, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, the Navy?
Well, I had thought about it a little bit because you get those mailings. And, you know, you think about them for a little bit before you throw them in. And I had always thought in my head, well, if, like my cousin who had volunteered to join the Army, I had always thought, well, if I'm going to get drafted and I know I'm going to go join the Marine Corps because I want to do what nobody's done before in
my
family.
What was your thought in regards to the Marine Corps? Let me give you my view, and I'm, let's say, a generation older than you, a little bit less than that. But, Air Force, well, I could never fly an airplane. Navy. No way I'm going to sit in the middle of the ocean after seeing those World War II films of the kamikaze pilots. Marines, well, I'm not tough enough to be a Marine. And Army, I don't know. And it turned out that I was drafted by the Army and failed the physical. So those were my thinkings, but to choose to be, I had a buddy that chose to be a Marine, and he went off to boot camp, and he came back tough as nails. I used to be able to, when we'd wrestle and fake fight and all that stuff, you know, be able to hold my own, but he came back, there's no way. So, Marine, did that have a something that you had heard about the Marines or saw the Marines or had a relative that was a Marine and preached it?
Well, I don't remember having any relatives that preached the Marine Corps. I had uncles and cousins and stuff that were in the Navy, Air Force, Army, things of that nature, different relatives. I hadn't known any that were Marines that were my family. One of my best friends, his dad was a Marine in Korea. And he had shared a little bit of stories, but the Marine Corps basically had the same concept and mystique that they do today still as being the toughest and the hardest things. And I remember when one of my acquaintances from high school went off and joined the Army and came back and was in his uniform. I'm like, well, if he could get through basic training in the Army, then it can't be too tough. I could do that, you know, part-time. Because, you know, I was pretty heady and I was a pretty stubborn farm boy that the things that you're not supposed to be able to do, I did anyways. Like I went out for the football team when I was a freshman. I only weighed 98 pounds. I gained 27 pounds in during football season. I ended up getting out of football weighing more than I did going in. And that happened for me every year in high school, is gaining more weight during football season and not gaining any weight anywhere, any other time. And basically you learn from science later that muscle weighs more than other things. And if you're putting on pounds, I was putting on muscle. I wasn't putting on fat because I could still take a shower and a garden hose. You know, when I got out of high school, I weighed 145 pounds and I was playing tackle, which is insane. And I was honorable mention all-conference guard. And I only played one conference game as a guard because our tackle got hurt, and I ended up having to cover the tackle position because what the coach said is I was the only one on the bus smart enough to learn all the blocking rules for tackle and a half an hour on the way to the game. So I ended up finishing the season as a tackle at 145 pounds. We didn't win a lot.
Yeah, but what? So you chose the Marines.
So I thought I chose the Marines. I had always said that if a push comes to shove, I got to do something. I'm going to do the Marine Corps just to see if I can do it because it's supposed to be hard. Boot camp is longer in the Marine Corps than any other branch of the service. And unless you're going to become a Green Beret or a Navy SEAL, which is beyond boot camp, I want to see if I could survive boot camp first. And I had the attitude that I thought I could handle it. And obviously,
so
I made
when
it.
Did you join?
I ended up joining shortly after that phone call.
19, 20 years old.
I was 19 years old when the gentleman came to our house, and we're all sitting around a big table, and this Marine recruiter is sitting there, and my sisters and my brother, and actually our whole family, we're not shy, and they were not what you call real welcoming to a Marine that was in our home. They weren't mean or hostile to him, but they were tenacious and had a lot of questions and stuff of that nature.
Did he wear his good-looking uniform?
He was in good-looking uniform, and I remember towards the end of the uniform, towards the end of the interview, my mom asked him, he said, you know, I have one more question for you. And he says, sure, ma'am, whatever you want to ask. She said, you know, I've heard the Marine Corps is pretty tough. She said, I want to know how you think my little boy will do in boot camp. And he looked at her and he said, ma'am, no offense intended, But after living in this house for 19 years, your little boy won't have a problem. And I tell people later that the hardest time I had in boot camp was not the physical demands. It was the self-control of the tongue. And you've been in boot camp. And sometimes when you are quick with the word and you are smart-witted, it's very difficult.
Or smart aleck.
Yeah, that's being the nice way of saying it. If you're smart aleck, like, and I was definitely, and my high school teachers could all very much vouch for that, because I was the go-to guy to get the teacher off topic. So when the Marine DI asks you one of those rhetorical questions that there's no right answer for, I always had to bite my tongue or lip, figuratively or literally, to not come back with a smart aleck remark that would end up causing me more time.
More push-ups.
Even, you end up with more push-ups even if you do it right. And I told somebody the easiest thing to do is do whatever they, to get out of boot camp, the easiest thing to do is do whatever they say, as quick as they say it, as fast as you can, as well as you can, with a yes, sir. No other arguments or comments.
How long did it take you to learn that lesson?
I kind of knew it a little bit from watching TV shows and watching the Marine Corps. I mean, Gomer Pyle was popular, so we had a little bit of a concept. To actually put it into practice the first night, when you get off the bus, that was when you're like, okay, just shut up and just grinning. Well, don't grin. Just keep a straight face and bear it. Because grinning is not good either. And roving eyes are not a good thing. So you just hop to and do it. And I was used to physically demanding things. I worked on the farm. I bailed hay and stuff.
Was there
and I had football practice. So.
Was there any cultural shock in regards to people drafted or, excuse me, joining from like New York City or Los Angeles or South Carolina?
Well, I did get to...
Being a little mid, you know, well, Michigan guy?
Well, there's two things. First year at university was kind of like that for me because okay. I was a farm boy and my roommates, which the university selects for you, were all kids of the suburbs of Detroit, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
And then in the Marine Corps, I ran into kids from all over the world. Well, not quite all over the world, but all over the nation.
Yeah.
And you're running into, like you said, kids from Chicago and with the accents and from Boston and finding out what bubblers are and different types of things. It was a cultural wake-up for me being a small town, like you said, from 500 people out in the Hicks to meeting kids that were from Detroit, New York, all over the place. And now the Marine Corps helped me learn how to appreciate people from different backgrounds. And growing up where I grew up, very seldom did I ever meet somebody that was from a single-parent family. Going into the Marine Corps, then I found kids that were from single-parent families, either male or female. And it was a little bit different trying to realize how different people perceive the world.
Were women inducted into the Marines at the time you were in?
Well, by the time I was in, the Marine Corps was totally volunteer. Okay. And there was a couple guys in my platoon when I was in boot camp that had been given a choice to volunteer by the judge.
Yeah.
Back at that time, you could, if you were the right age, you could avoid some criminal things being put on your record if you decided to join the Marine Corps or the Army.
But
or
did they have women? Did you have women in your
not in boot
company? Or boot
not
camp?
In our company. There, okay. The women were a separate battalion on a different... And I went to Parris Island, South Carolina.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
And the women were on a different location on the island. We would see them rarely.
When did you start appreciating Parris Island?
When did I start appreciating
Paris right after Island? Boot camp or in the middle or you never?
You know, Parris Island was the other thing to me that being a farm boy where we created a lot of obstacles for each other in either in the field or in a barnyard or in the barn, obstacles. they were always telling us how nobody had ever gotten off the island alive from boot camp. And there was that twisted sense of I could do it that kept playing in my brain. But my common sense overwhelmed me, and I didn't ever try. Because we had guys that tried to get off the island and didn't do very well.
Now, there were, was that the time where there were several deaths in regards to the training that was going on?
There were a couple of deaths. We had one young man while I was stationed there in boot camp that died. He hadn't even been on the island 2 days yet, and he died. And they found out that he had a heart condition that he knew about that somehow went into normal physical for the Marine Corps. The doctors didn't catch it, but it was something a little bit more complicated that his home physician had told him about. And he lied about it on his application, and he was just walking across the base. He wasn't even in uniform, didn't even have uniforms yet, and he passed out.
Our guest this morning is Jay Webster on the Wayne Eddy Affair. He is employed at Jesse James Lanes, new to Northfield, originally from Vesterburg, Michigan. We have him through boot camp now in the Marines, and we'll find out what's next.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Did you know that Minnesota state law allows you to choose the auto glass company who repairs your vehicle? At Paul's Inn Glass, properly repairing your windshield is critical, and we take your safety seriously. No matter how your windshield was damaged, make sure to have it repaired properly by a company that understands the importance of using OEM quality glass and urethane. We pride ourselves in making sure our customers are always satisfied. No exceptions, no excuses. Get it done right and get back on the road with Paul's Inn Glass in Northfield and Faribault. For more information, go to paulsinnglass.com or call 645-6450 in Northfield and 334-8680 in Faribault.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Good sunny morning. It's the sun has broken through the clouds. It's now a beautiful morning in Northfield, Minnesota, this March 22nd, 2018. The marching band came. Name this tune if you can, Mr. J. Webster.
Is it Johnny, Don't Be a Hero? Or
Billy.
Billy, Don't Be a Hero.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to tell me who sang this.
I know who it is, but I can't think of their name right now.
Bo Donaldson.
But what, and the band he sang with, was it, what they called?
What?
I think there was a band he sang with it for a while.
I know anytime I see Billy Stanton, I don't know if you know Billy, but I always, that tune goes through my head.
Yeah.
My guest this morning is Jay Webster. He works out at the Jesse James Lanes, new to Northfield, basically. And we got him in the United States Marine Corps in 1974, in the summer, fall of 74.
Well, actually, in the Marine Corps was in 76.
Oh, well, what did you do till then?
I went to college.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Never mind. Now, the war's over.
Yes.
And so there's no fear or concern about being put right in the swamps of Vietnam. So now it's just going to, when I say just, I'm not belittling it.
Right.
It's do your 2 years and get out, 3 years?
Three years.
Okay. So you sign up for 3 years, and now I suppose what you're going to do is tell me you went to Germany.
No, oh, I didn't.
Okay.
Actually, after Paris Island, I got sent to 29 Palms, which the Marine Corps calls 29 Stumps, California, which is Southern California in the desert. At the time, I don't know if it still is, it's the biggest stateside military base in America. I think it was around 5,000 square miles of desert. Yeah, where
is that, just south of San Diego?
It's south of Palm Springs.
Okay.
Palm Springs is the closest real habitation, I think, that you have there. And I did electrical school out there, electronic school, learned all about Ohm's law and all those type of things, and then worked on radar sets and people finders and things of that nature, which people finders is a little tiny radar that's capable of sensing human beings walking through the foliage and stuff of that nature. Back then it was a big deal. Today it's not that big a deal with stuff that we have with GPSs and everything. So I learned, I had that training. Then I got transferred to Maryland, the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, because the guys that graduate towards the top of your class keep getting more and more training, because that's the way the military does it. If you're smart and you do well, then keep fixing you to do something else. And went to Aberdeen, and I learned how to fix a little tiny computer, which was that you and I in our prime would not want to carry it more than about 25 yards without resting. And they called it two-man portable. And it had, which is laughable by today's standard, it had an 8K hard drive in it. And that's 8,000 bits, which is, I mean, your phone has more than that.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, calculators have more than that anymore. But at that time, it was a little computer, and it was set up, and it was designed, I guess, toward the late Korea time, and they were still using it in Nam. And forward observers would see an enemy target, and they could tell them the coordinates of the enemy target, and they could radio it back. They could put those coordinates into this computer, and it would tell the big guns on either the battleships or carriers or whatever, or the army bases where the howitzers and stuff were at. It would tell them the elevation, the windage, and the powder charge to put in to drop those shells within 5 feet of the target. And 5 feet back then, when you got something that's blowing up, you know, that's a tremendous amount of accuracy. Now we have stuff that's more accurate than that now. But you're talking about in at the time frame when that computer was being used, that's pretty good accuracy.
Yeah.
And unless you had a concrete steel-reinforced bunker.
Was there a woman in your life at this point in the Army? Or, excuse me, the Marines?
In the Marine Corps. Well, there was, let's see.
Well, you don't have to talk about all the women. I just wondered if you were married by then.
I was not married by
then. Okay.
There was a significant other right after school.
Okay.
Then we were engaged, and that didn't go well.
Well, aren't you glad after all these years that you're married to the woman you're married to?
I sure am. That's okay. A whole different story, and that's a wonderful one.
All right. So now I'm going to move it along because it's 10:30. And how long did you serve the country as a U.S. Marine?
3 years.
And you have a...
Well, 3 years active duty, 3 years inactive duty.
Do you have little signals that people give that so you can let somebody know at the bowling alley that you're a Marine or they give you? I know the other day you said, I don't know how I learned you were a Marine, but anyhow, I know there's a great deal of pride to being a Marine. My former partner, Don McCray, the late Don McCray, was a Marine and very proud of it. And I have a lot of respect for Marines because I think it takes a lot of integrity, strength, and patriotism. So that you, I know you're proud of it.
Yeah. Yes. And there's different things that goes on within the Marine Corps too. You know, some guys are combat. I mean, the Marine Corps' attitude is every man is a rifleman. So you're all trained to know how to shoot and kill. I had students, and I work in education primarily, although right now I'm working at Jesse James Lang. Most of the time I work for schools and things of that nature in the past, and I currently substitute teach for one of the private schools in the area and but do bus driving and stuff. But, and then I guess in boot camp for me, my claim to fame in boot camp was I had, at 200 and 300 yards, I had a 3-inch grouping for rapid fire of 10 round rapid fire. So a 3-inch grouping at 200 yards and a 3-inch grouping at 300 yards is...
Is that a 16?
M16. Okay. And that's with iron sights.
Go ahead.
With iron sights, that's a little bit more challenging to do than with a scope.
Okay. So when you did 3-3, is that Weekend Warrior after 3 years?
After three years, it was just inactive reserve, and you can be reactivated by the government anytime that they feel that there's a need.
Okay.
But you don't have to report every other 1 week in a month or anything of that nature.
What was your highest ranking?
My highest ranking was corporal.
Corporal. Would that be a G8 or
that'd
G7?
That would be a 4.
A G4.
Okay.
Okay. Are you disappointed that you didn't get to at least be sergeant?
Well, actually, depending on how you look at it, I turned down sergeant.
Okay.
That's more
money.
Well, I had a 3-year contract for active duty. I was due to be out of the Marine Corps in the middle of January. I actually turned 20 the first day of boot camp. And I was due to get out of the Marine Corps in January. And my CO, company CO, a commanding officer, called me into his office. And we were well known because it's a small base. And he said, I got some questions for you. And I said, okay, sir. He says, well, you know you're up for sergeant. I said, yes, sir. He said, you have everything you need for me to promote you to sergeant.
Single rocker?
Which would be for the Marine Corps. Be a sergeant first class. Sergeant, actually. So it would be 3 bars.
Okay, up and 1 2. Down.
No. Nope. That's first class.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Okay. He said, you're up for sergeant. He said, you're up for sergeant. You have everything you need to do. He said, I see that you're due to get out in January. I said, yes, sir. He said, is there anything I can do to talk you into reenlisting? I said, I don't think so, sir. He said, would you like to know what the signing bonus would be if you reenlist? Because at that time, particularly in electronics, which I was in computer repair electronics, they would give cash money to you for signing your name for an extension. I said, not really, sir. And he said, well, then you will understand if I don't recommend you for a sergeant, won't you? And I said, sir. Yes, sir, because why, even as a, you know, I'm an American citizen, why, what's the point of the American government paying me sergeant wages for 2.5 months when they know there's not, that they're going to get the same value out of me for 2.5 months. It's not like I'm going to stop doing what I do with quality work. So why pay me sergeant wages for 2.5 months?
So you saved the government $88. What did you do when you mustered out?
What did I do when I mustered out? I drove unemployment for a little while until I got bored, because you can't sit, with a personality like mine, you can't sit around at home doing nothing. So I ended up finding a job doing appliance repair and fixing microwaves and radar, radio.
Yeah, radar ranges, I remember. Yeah,
radar ranges when they first came out. Dishwashers, washing machines, dryers, all that kind of
stuff. Always busy.
And I would come to your home and do it for you.
Yeah, and nowadays you have to make an appointment 6 days in advance and be there between this hour and that hour, and then get charged $75 to tell you that they can't fix the warrant and it ran out of warranty 5 minutes ago. Anyhow, a little bitterness there? Okay. What about, so you did that. Well, what did you do next with your career?
Next with my career, well, it was during that career that I met my wife.
Okay.
And
she had a stranded washing machine or something?
Actually, she was going to Central Michigan University, and she was studying in her major field, which would be secretarial procedures, and she was learning medical terminology and legal terminology. She wanted to be an office management type thing or secretarial work. And we met at a outreach for college students that were helping them find focus and stuff, and it was an organization called His House, which was working off the concept of Christ, Jesus Christ, it's His home, and kids would get together for Bible studies and things of that nature. I met her there. I was working full-time, so I had the money. Okay, most college students don't have money. And so we got I moved in with a bunch of college guys that were there because it was cheaper for me to live, pay rent with them, and not have to drive very far for work. I was, because a lot of my service calls that I was getting was in Mount Pleasant anyways. So it was, you know, that way the last call I had when I got done with the night, I'm 5 minutes from home or three blocks from home.
Were you independent?
I was independent at the time.
So you met her there.
I met her there.
How soon did you get married after you met her?
We knew each other for a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
We were engaged, and then we were engaged the early spring before she graduated.
Okay.
And then we were married that August. And during that time, I decided it was an opportunity. I found out about an opportunity to go back to school again and get involved in where I'm at, in the profession that I'm in now. I ended up going. We got married August 14th, and I started school the first part of September at Valley Forge Christian College, which is what it's called now. Now it's called the University of Valley Forge because it's grown. And I ended up graduating with a degree in Christian Education Administration, and I've been working in Christian Education and Administration and teaching in education for private schools ever since then, for the most part, except for the last year and a half.
Well, it's 22 minutes before 11 o'clock. We'll take another break, and we'll come back and find out how my guest, Jay Webster, ended up in Northfield, Minnesota.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the National Sports Center in Blaine. See up to 150 home improvement experts. The Home Improvement and Design Expo, Saturday at the National Sports Center in Blaine. It's the smart place to start your next home improvement project. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Having proper insurance coverage is extremely important for your farm, home, or anything else you value. Visit with Carla at the Kenyon Holden Mutual Company in Wanamingo about all of your insurance needs. Carla has special packages available for the farm, so sit down with her and go over the right coverage for you. The Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual Company would like to salute all of the area farmers and everyone in the agriculture business now during National Ag Week.
Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
Come on, baby.
Come on.
Because
I'm too loud.
Are you?
Everybody's doing a brand dance now.
Come on, baby, do the locomotion.
That's the title, The Locomotion. Do you know who does it?
Isn't that the same group that later did YMCA?
No, not the Village People.
Okay.
Grand Funk.
Grand Funk.
Railroad. Grand Funk Railroad. Once again, we're live and in color from our studios in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota on KYMN Radio, 95.1, the 1 FM and 1080 AM. My guest is Jay Webster. And Jay, when you, what type of credentials do you need to carry to be in administration or as a teacher in a parochial school?
That varies from school to school, depending on their attitude and things of that nature. I have a bachelor's degree in religious administration, school education, and I have a master's degree in education from Liberty University. So, it varies. There's a licensing organization called Association of Christian Schools International that credentials some things, and it varies from state to state. Minnesota being a little bit more, depending on how you look at the word, we used to say progressive in a positive way in education. Now progressive is not very positive anymore with education. But in Minnesota, you have a little bit more freedom with education as far as like homeschooling, private education. Charter schools are better in Minnesota. A lot of things are better in Minnesota. In Minnesota, you have the opportunity to take college classes at the high when you're in high school, and you have that opportunity. So there's, it depends on how the structure is set up. I'm also an ordained minister, which gives me some freedom and licensing as far as in the state of Minnesota and some other states because of the religious freedom that we have in America. So having the bachelor's degree and a master's degree in the areas of education and the years of experience that I've had in education and being ordained, which basically just looks at some Christian organization, whether it's the Baptist or the Catholics or the Assemblies of God or some organization that looks at you and says, okay, you're not a pedophile, you don't have any felonies, you have a pretty sound understanding of God's Word or the Bible, and you're not a heretic by Christian standards or Protestant standards or even Catholic standards, that gives you a lot of freedom to be an administrator or an educator here in the state of Minnesota and particularly a lot of other states here in America as far as Protestant education goes.
Have you had several positions? And how did you end up in Northfield?
Well,
what is your wife's name, by the way?
My wife's name is Mary.
Mary. And do you have children?
I have children, three children.
Okay, so you and Mary got married.
And our firstborn is Sarah.
Sarah, all right, after the Bible, okay.
And my secondborn is Jason. And my wife's idea was to spell that J-A-Y-S-O-N.
I just say it, Jason.
Yeah, but that was an interesting way
it.
To spell
yeah.
it. Yeah.
And
my lastborn is Samuel.
Samuel, okay.
Good biblical name.
Do you call him Sam?
Yes.
Okay. How old is Sarah?
She was born in...
Got to use a microphone.
Oh.
Well, Sarah within a 10 years.
34.
Okay. How about Jason?
33.
And then Sam?
Sam will be 31.
So Ooh. They're all adults?
They're all adults.
Are you a grandparent?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, let's figure that out so they can hear their name on the radio when they get older. Let's start with Sarah. How many does she have?
She has two children.
What are their names?
Maddie.
Natty. Okay.
Matty with an M.
Matty. Okay, let me erase that. M-A-T. I'm just spelling it.
That's fine.
Okay, Matty and?
And Blade.
Who?
Blade. Like razor blade?
Blade.
Yes, sir.
That's interesting. Any others with
Sarah? That's Sarah's only children.
How about Jason?
Jason has two.
And their names are?
Maya.
Maya. I like that one. Maya.
And Jesse.
And Jesse. Ooh, cool. And then how about Sam?
Sam has no children.
Okay. So... At 15 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, our guest this morning is Jay Webster. He is employed at the Jesse James Lanes in Northfield after having served time in the Marines and in Christian work and an ordained minister, a computer guy when they were first new, a fixer of washing machines and dishwashers. You've done a lot of different things, but how in the world, from Vestaburg, Michigan, and from California, how did you end up in Northfield, Minnesota?
Northfield, Minnesota, the short form or the long form?
Well, we have 14 minutes.
Okay, well, we moved to Minnesota originally back in 92, and I worked with a Christian school in Benson, Minnesota.
Okay.
And... We were there until 09.
Did you work with the radio station when you were in Benson?
Not very much. There was the
Dan Davies was your
There were some people there that we... There were different things. We had advertisements on the radio station and stuff of that nature.
That's good.
But I never did an interview with them.
Okay.
So you're the first time that I've been on the public airways at any length of time.
All right. And...
Well, we ran with that school for... And all of our children graduated from that school.
Okay.
Then my in-laws were getting a little bit older, and they were getting into a situation where they were trying to figure out what to do with their retirement, and we wanted to be closer to them to be able to assist the family in that area, and we found a job for a school in New Jersey. So in 2009, we moved to a Christian school in New Jersey, which put us only about 2 hours from my in-laws, and then we, with other family members, we coordinated them moving to another situation and selling their home. And then we started having grandchildren out here in Minnesota. And all three children had graduated from Minnesota, and some of them had gone to university here in Minnesota. And two of the boys were living in Minnesota, and the one was having grandchildren. Jason was having grandchildren with his wife here in Minnesota. And it was, we were thinking, well, it'd be nice to be closer to grandchildren. It's easier to spoil grandchildren and love up on them.
And you're in New Jersey at the time?
And we were in New Jersey at the time. Okay. So I thought there was a school out here that had a position that I would be interested in. So we looked at, we were applying for that and being interviewed for that.
Where was that?
And that's in Farmington.
Okay.
Okay, Christian Life Academy in Farmington. And that didn't quite work out for us to be employed there, and somebody said, well, why are you going to move to Minnesota without a job? And I said, well, I have a work history, and I can always find a job that's good enough to pay the bills. I might not make a lot of money, but I could pay the bills. So, and I'm working for Jesse James, and my wife works for the Alina Clinic, and we make enough to pay the bills, and we don't have any creditors or anything of that nature, and we moved back here a little over a year and a half ago so that we could be closer to grandchildren, and we get to see the babies at least once a week.
Well, I really like an in-depth comment on how you found Northfield. Now, you looked at Farmington.
Right.
Okay, so how did you end up choosing to live in Northfield, or was it because there was a job opening for you or your wife?
Well, we looked at different things. We looked at the possibility of trying to purchase something around in the area, and then we're like, well, we don't know where I'm going to work for sure, so we probably should rent for a while. So then we started looking through there, and we were on the internet, and we started looking at places reasonable. We didn't want to be close to the cities because we're not city people. And we looked around Farmington, and we looked around different little towns around here, and Northfield seemed to be hit pretty well, and there was some good news on the internet and a good buzz out there that Northfield was a nice place to live, nice retirement. One of the things that I guess is in the top 10 of places to retire, in particularly in Minnesota, maybe even in the nation, because it's very acclimatical to elderly people, and there's lots of places to walk, nice parks. And me being born in Michigan, the cold weather is not a deterrent for me. My wife and I lived in western Minnesota in Benson for almost 20 years, though we know how to acclimate to the weather, so that wasn't scaring us. And we found a place that was reasonable for rent, that would be easy for me to take a non-high-paying job and still be able to pay the rent and pay the bills. And so we moved to Northfield.
And your wife's originally from New Jersey?
My wife is originally from all parts of the world, just about.
What does that mean?
Her father was in the Air Force, and he spent 20-plus years in the Air Force. So my wife was born in Hawaii, and she's been all over the world. She's been, well, not quite all over the world. She's been in Europe. She's been to England. She's been to Germany. She's been to Wyoming. She's been in upstate, in the New England area. I forget what base up there. And then one of the reasons I met her is her father was stationed in Michigan at the Air Force Base in Oscoda a couple of different times, and that's where he was stationed when he retired. So she graduated from high school in Oscoda and went to Central Michigan University, so we met. But my wife, I brought more permanency to my wife than she'd ever seen before, because she had not used to, she was used to moving every, maximum every 3 years.
Yeah, well, they say Army brats.
Or, yeah.
But in this case, the Air Force.
Air Force brat.
It's 8 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Jay Webster is my guest at KYMN Studios in downtown Northfield. He is employed by Jesse James Lanes, and we're going to take a final break here on Kim, and then we'll be back and find out what it's like to Work at a bowling alley, I guess, although I have had your boss, Terry Heilman, on the air on more than one occasion. We're both devotees of music from the late 50s. So, and you control that out there at the bowling alley. You're the one that tunes in the station. We're going to take this break. We'll be right back after words from... Well, here's something to do this weekend.
Dennis Kirk brings you the 31st annual Donnie Smith Bike and Car Show, presented by Geico, Lucas Oil, Russ Brown, Indian Motorcycle, and Sturgis Buffalo Chip. This is Zep, and I'm coming home for this one. Join me Saturday and Sunday, March 24th and 25th at the St. Paul River Center. Don't forget about the Swap Meet, Tattoo Expo, and join me for the Budweiser Happy Hour Saturday night featuring Corey Stevens live. More info at DonnieSmithBikeShow.com. The party really gets started Friday night, March 23rd. It's the thrills and spills of indoor flat track racing at the State Fairgrounds. 6 to 10 Friday night, March 23rd. Sponsored by Dennis Kirk, Geico, Sturgis Buffalo Chip, Russ Brown, Lucas Oil, and S&S Cycle. IndoorFlatTrackRacing.com.
And take your adventures off-road at the Outdoor Life Expo, March 24th and 25th in Warner Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds, featuring all the latest in four-wheelers, ATVs, UTVs. Admission is just $12 for adults. Children under 12 are free. OutdoorLifeExpo.com.
For your next haircut, here's a thought. Try Family Hair of Northfield. They're locally owned and operated. Family Hair offers friendly service at a great price. Located just across the parking lot from Just Food, Family Hair does cuts, perms, coloring, everything hair. No appointment is needed. Just walk right in. Christy, Megan, and their staff are great at what they do at prices you can't beat. If you have younger kids, they'll love the special kids seat with their choice of movies to watch while they get their hair cut. Visit Family Hair of Northfield.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Wanamingo Mutual Insurance Agency would like to salute all of the area farmers. Farmers make up the backbone of America, and their work is much appreciated. Farmers, contact Wanamingo Mutual Insurance Agency for all your needs. Give Bonnie a call, and she'll be happy to sit down with you, assess your needs, and work out plans that give you peace of mind in the upcoming year. Wanamingo Mutual Insurance Agency and Wanamingo salute the agriculture industry, now during National Ag Week.
I like this song. Do you know it? Class of 1974?
Yes, I do, but I can't think of the name of it yet.
You know, everybody, that happens to everybody. Oh, I know it, but I don't know it. I don't know the name.
Give me a way for some words.
If you got a problem, don't care what it is. If you need a hand, I can assure you this.
I can help.
Yep. Can you name the performer?
I can help.
It's his swan song.
Yes, it is.
It would sure do me good to do you good.
Billy Swan,
yeah.
And I Can Help. Number 10 in all of 1974, the year my guest Jay Webster graduated from high school in Vestaburg, Michigan, right smack dab in the middle of that great state. And he had a whole bunch of siblings, Susan, Marcy, Betty, and Dick, and he's married to Mary, and Mary and Jay have kids named Sarah, Jason, and Sam, and they have grandchildren named Maddie, Blade, Maya, and Jesse. And now we want to know how this ordained minister, this former Marine, this computer guy before computers were even known by the general public, how does he end up in Northfield, Minnesota? And are you suggesting that, having lived in Minnesota, at Benson, for example, that you heard positive things about Northfield, Minnesota, while you were looking in Farmington and other places south of the cities?
Yes. We searched on the Internet a little bit. My daughter-in-law had suggested a couple of different websites to help find housing and rental units and things of that nature. And we're looking for things that were reasonable and we just, a couple different places showed up in the Northfield area, and we're like, yeah, and then we couldn't come see them because we're in Jersey. So my son, and at his, that time it was his fiance, came and checked out the house and looked it all over and took pictures of it and sent it to us. And they said, yeah, da, 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 da. So then we talked back and forth, and we got a hold of the realtor organization that was leasing the place, and they made arrangement with, based on our credit history and who we are. And
what side of town?
We're over there by the elementary school, over
Sibley.
Yeah, by the Northfield Retirement Center.
Oh, Greenvale.
Greenvale. We live on Northfield.
So how did you find a job where you would be qualified to fix bowling mechanisms and be a counterman and a bartender and all of those things?
Well, while I was in Benson, I resigned the school there and went to work on my master's degree while I was in Benson. And one of the jobs I had there was working at a bowling alley there. And I was working part-time, and the guy offered me full-time wages if I would quit the other part-time job, and he would give me 40 hours. So I had some time working at a bowling alley before. So then when we were here and the opportunity to work at the Farmington School didn't play out the way we would hope for, or we anticipated. And then I saw the bowling alley, and I love to bowl. I've been bowling since I was a high school student, and I bowled in the Marine Corps excessively. And when I was bowling in other bowling alley, when I was working there, I bowled really extremely excessively working for them. And so I stopped in there, and they said they were hiring, and they were taking applications, and I gave them an application, and Terry and Julie called me in for an interview, and I was hired on the spot. And it was the first place that actually applied outside of the Farmington School.
How do you like it?
I enjoy it a lot.
How do you like it? Well, that's a good place to know a lot of people in town right away.
Well, you get, you know, well, the thing of it is, it's a good place for everybody in town to get to know you. It's a challenge for you to try to keep and remember everybody else, because you see them, and then you see, you know, I see a Monday night, what, 60, 80 guys, and Thursday night, 60, 80 guys, Tuesday night, there's 40 women in there. Wednesday night, there's enough 40 or 50 women in there. Trying to remember everybody when you're meeting them all as a mob. And then so there's a lot of faces that I still see that I know the faces. And once in a while, I have to, like you did the other day, we have to, okay, what's your last name? What's your first name? You know, and sometimes I have to do that with a customer. And I know who they are. I'm like, you know, so well, I know so-and-so. Okay, yeah, but what's your last name? Because I want to set you up a tab in the till, because I know you're going to want more fries or something. So if you're running a tab, then it goes in there as a frequent bowler or whatever, and there's a discount. You can earn points from that kind of stuff. So keeping track of everybody, when they know who you are, they all know who you are a lot better than you know who they are.
But you're getting to know people better.
Getting to know people better and getting to know a lot more people in the community faster than I would they're saying stocking shelves at Cub.
Well, I want to say thank you very much for coming in today and getting to know you a little bit better. And welcome to Northfield, Minnesota, the home of Cows, Colleges, and Contentment. NKYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 AM and 95.1 FM, The One. Thanks again.
Thank you.
My guest this morning, Jay Webster on The Wayne Eddy Affair.
95.1, The One, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.